If I was any better, I'd have to call the doctor.
This week on Isletunes, a look back at 2024 through interviews conducted with island artists who sat for the Isletunes microphones, narrowed them down to six, so you're gonna get six songs to go with them. Yes, ready, PEI? Let's get her done! How's she going, Prince Edward Island? I am your host, Adam Michael James, and you are listening to Isletunes for the week of December 29th, 2024. I can't believe it any more than you can, but here we are at the end of 24.
Damn it!
Hey, can't use that again after this episode, so why the hell not? But yeah, to the other point, it's been quite the 52 weeks, boy has it. And as the master of ceremonies for this show, I've been lucky enough not only to play music from over 300 PEI artists, but to meet a bunch of them too, specifically for interviews here on Isletunes. Some musicians have decades under their belts and others are just starting out. It is my pleasure for this special episode to rerun six of those interviews for you and the songs that correspond with them. In showbiz, we call this a clip show. My podcast, my rules, but I think you'll enjoy these revisits, particularly if you didn't get a chance to catch these chats when they first aired. I know podcasts don't air, but I'm broadcasting school alumni, so work with me, okay? Oh, right, before I go on, I do have to make a correction because I made a boo-boo in last week's Christmas episode.
Damn it!
I said that Cynthia McLeod was a featured artist on the Isletunes theme. Well, that was wrong. Of course, it's Kaylin McCauley who fiddles on the track. They both start with C and end with Mac? I don't know what I was thinking. I guess I was lost in space. Sorry, Kaylin. Getting back to this episode, in the spirit of fairness and not prioritizing one artist over another, let's work through these folks in chronological order, starting almost a year ago on January 14th when I had the very real honor of getting to talk to legendary fingerstyle guitarist Don Ross, who taped his first tunes on tape, that's cassette for those who know, and he did so the year before I graduated high school, which for the calendar's sake was in 1987. I got Don to run the gamut, touching on how he got started, how being half Mi'kmaq influenced his music, and then he quenched us with a cup from his album Water, which had come out not long before. Don Rossett from your faucet. Yeah, I know that was terrible. What did I say about my podcast? It's provided to you thanks to this
Isletunes Flashback.
January 14th, 2024.
It's hard to even know where to start with this week's guest because his career spans nearly four decades. There's so many albums, 22 to be exact, and so many accolades. He won the National Fingerstyle Guitar Championship in the States twice, and he's had a record hit the top 10 on the U.S. Billboard New Age chart. This is all the more reason I am so incredibly honored to have the legendary Don Ross sit down with me here in the Isletunes studio, otherwise known as my basement, to chat about his latest album, Water. Don, thank you for coming. It's great to actually meet you.
Yeah, what the heck, eh? It's nice to meet you too, Adam Michael.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're here. Now, you make the island your home now, Stratford. Mm-hmm. We're practically neighbors.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? But you're from Montreal originally, right?
Yeah, born and raised in Montreal. Yeah.
How long have you been on the island and what brought you here?
Well, I married an islander. I was married once before my first wife passed away a bunch of years ago. And when I remarried, I married a gal from PEI. And her name is Brooke Miller. She's a singer-songwriter and all that kind of stuff. That's how we met, through music. I was a fan first. I heard the music on the CBC when I was in Nova Scotia one day, and I thought, who the heck's that? That was lovely. And so then I met her a month later at a music convention also in Halifax. And we kept in touch, and I offered to produce her next record, and the rest is history.
Freudian slip.
Yeah, intentional Freudian slip. So, yeah, we've been married 19 years now. It's my first time living on the island, obviously not hers, but we've skipped around. We've lived in four different provinces over the course of our time together. So, you know?
Yeah. I understand that while your first official album, Bering Strait, came out in 1989, you had your first unofficial release via cassette in 1986.
Right.
How did that come about, and did those initial tracks ever find their way to a wider audience?
What happened was, in 1986, I decided, well, okay, I want to go for it. I want to be a full-time musician. I had a music degree. I did an undergraduate degree at York in Toronto. I sort of wasn't quite sure if I wanted to be in what capacity I wanted to be a musician. I thought originally I wanted to write scores for television and film and stuff like that. But back then, even though I was in the big city for that in Canada, I didn't know where to look. I didn't know what resources to look up. There was no internet, so I couldn't just hop on a website and find out or whatever. So I didn't have any connections. So I decided to go ahead and make a recording. I went into the studio in the north end of Toronto and recorded a big pile of stuff, just everything I did. Solo guitar music, stuff with vocals. I played some piano. I played some fretless bass. I played some percussion. I even played banjo in one tune. The whole idea was to sort of make it kind of like an album length demo and use that to shop around. So I got some work out of it as a side person and a few gigs out of it. And then I joined a band. I was in this quartet that's called iMusic for a little while. I did a lot of my music. And then finally, I got offered a solo recording deal after I won that guitar competition you were talking about. After I won it the first time, I got a lot of attention in the local CBC in Toronto, and that led to a recording deal. And
cool. Yeah. You still have the cassette?
I have a copy, I think, still at home. I tend to suppress it. It was a very junior early effort, but I'm sure as a piece of Don Ross detritus from my history, it might be interesting to 7 or 8 people, who knows. but a lot of the tunes, a lot of the solo guitar tunes that are on that cassette album ended up on my first real album.
Okay, so you reworked them. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Much better recorded, and
well, of course,
you know, all that kind of stuff. And it was great because it was done for a label and they had a lot of support from the CBC, and so right away the music got a lot of attention very quickly, so I was able to start booking tours almost right away.
Well, that just proves that despite the, you know, the media involved in recording it, the talent was already there, and you know,
that's the rumor anyway.
Well, you must be doing something right because you're still here all these years
later. Yeah, I know, it's funny, eh?
it's funny. It's fascinating to me that you're both of Scottish and Mi'kmaq descent, through your father and mother respectively. Has being part Mi'kmaq specifically influenced your music over the years, and if so, how?
It's been probably more of a covert or spiritual kind of thing. My mother had a tough time growing up on the res in Nova Scotia. So essentially when she ran away to Montreal, she kind of wanted to leave that part of her life behind. Mm-hmm. So she kind of posed as a non-Indigenous person. Like, she didn't let people know. She didn't even let my father know. My mother went to the grocery store, and meanwhile the mail came, and he looked through the mail and he just saw official looking things. So he started opening them thinking they were bills. And he didn't realize he had opened something that was actually addressed to my mother. And it was from the Department of Indian Affairs.
Oh, wow.
And it was something to do with her treaty rights or something like that. And he looked at it and went, oh, wow, cool. So my Scottish father, my Scottish immigrant father, realized suddenly he's got a First Nations wife. So she came back from the store and with a big smile on his face, he says, hey, Marie, did you know you're an Indian? He's holding up the letter. And she's, oh, Ron, I'm sorry. I was going to tell you. And he says, why were you even worried about it? Like, I don't care. And she was like, oh, I thought you wouldn't love me as much. I mean, it was really ingrained, you know, that Indigenous people really thought of themselves as very, very second, third, fourth class.
Well, that's because that's how they were treated.
Yeah, absolutely. But on a musical level, you couldn't really put on one of my records and say, oh, yeah, there's chanting. Oh, there's jingle dresses. Oh, there's drums. No, that's not really what I do. But I think some of the tunes have been more covertly influenced. But it would be really hard. You'd have to use a DNA analysis to figure out where. When I was living in Toronto, I was really heavily involved in the Indigenous arts community there. I got adopted pretty quickly into the local Indigenous arts scene. So I did a lot of music for live theater, Indigenous theater. I did a lot of work with the what was then called the Canadian Native Arts Foundation, all that kind of stuff. So that's cool. I mean, I feel very, very welcomed always when I work in an Indigenous context. And I just did a tour with a band based in Ontario called Sultans of String, and their latest recording project is called Walking Through the Fire, and it's an Indigenous collaboration album. So they had a whole bunch of us Indigenous artists on stage. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
With them, and I collaborated on one tune on the album that turned out really well. So yeah, I'm really pleased about it.
Now, as I mentioned, you've had 22 albums out over the past 35 years, which is approaching the territory of Prince.
Yeah, it's getting there. Right? Getting there. Yeah.
Your latest is Water, which came out in what we can now call last year.
Now, we can now call it that officially.
How might Water be different from your previous work, and what do you feel stands out on it?
Since my last solo recording, I've taken a master's degree in orchestration.
Oh, wow.
So over the course of my studies and also the next little while, I was writing more and more music for television, from film, and that kind of thing, and really honing my craft as an orchestrator. And I ended up writing some stuff that I thought, this would be really good on a Don Ross record, and it would be really different from what I've done before. And there's even one tune that involves a full 70-piece orchestra on it.
Oh, wow, you know? That's amazing.
So that's exciting for me to be able to work that way. You know, it's wild.
Now, I've controlled the playlist this entire episode because that's what I usually do here. But now it's your turn to play DJ. So pick a track from Water and tell us why you've chosen it.
That's a good question. Just for the heck of it, if this is not a tune that I would play live because it's way too involved. But there's a tune on the album called The World Didn't Change After All. And it's a piece I wrote when I was a student doing my master's degree. I was asked to, as one of my assignments, I had to score a film. And the film this time, it was a documentary on the 50th anniversary of Apollo 8.
Mm.
So the first of the Apollos that actually orbited the moon. So it's a short film, half an hour. But it needed music pretty much top to bottom. So right. I wrote all this music. And one of the pieces I wrote was for the segment where they're looking back on what they thought might happen. What they thought that by going to the moon, it would unite the world and make it a more peaceful place. And that's not what happened.
Not even close.
And talking about how kind of idealistic they were and how disappointing it was. So that's what the title's about. And the piece is quite melancholy. Very, very pretty. It's like the prettiest tune on the record. But originally it was for piano and orchestra. And then I thought, why not just throw a guitar part on in the studio? So it was recorded over in Prague by the City of Prague Philharmonic. And I added a guitar part at my studio here in Stratford.
I've been talking with the one and only Don Ross, and I'm still hella humbled that you're here. Thank you so much for your generosity and giving me access to the entirety of your catalog to share with Islanders via IsleTunes. Thank you, Don, for being here today.
Thanks, Adam Michael. It's a pleasure.
Awesome.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Don Ross on Isletunes with a cut from his 2023 album Water, The World Didn't Change After All. So, even a trip to the moon didn't unite humanity. I wonder what will. I hope we find out in 2025 if ever the world needed changing. One PEI artist hasn't changed the world per se, but he has enlightened the island by helping to shine a giant spotlight on the history of its black citizens, a history which had just about submerged into chronological oblivion. Scott Parsons began setting music to the tales of notable black islanders already in 1993, and at the time the Isletunes microphones caught up with him, he had recently bookended that first effort with 2022's The Gates of No Return. For Black History Month this year, Scott and I talked about how he became entranced by music as a child, and how his delving into the stories of black islanders has gone over in a mostly white PEI population. From February 4th, here's Scott Parsons.
Isletunes Flashback.
February 4th, 2024.
All right, now, as I hope you guys all know, February is Black History Month, and no one has done more to uncover and commemorate PEI Black History than the man you're about to hear from right here. His storied career spans 5 decades and has taken him to enough places that your passport would be jealous. He was mentored by Gene McClellan, and he uses his variety of talents, which, in addition to his self-styled Rastacadian approach to music, includes the stage, broadcasting, and puppetry to help at-risk youth and teach black history to kids and adults alike. I have the unique privilege and honor to speak to none other than Scott Parsons, here in the Isletunes studio, otherwise known as my basement. Scott, it's a genuine thrill that you're here.
Hey, Michael, nice of you to have me in.
I'm glad that you're here. Now, we could talk about your musical odyssey, your travels, the awards, your honors, the many projects and groups and bands you've been involved with, but that would fill up the whole podcast. So what I really want to know is how you got started, even before Gene McClellan took you under his wing. What led you to music, and how did you discover this immense talent that you have?
Okay. My father played guitar at home. He didn't play in public. He carried a guitar with him all the way through World War II overseas. So as a little kid, I found a picture of me at 2 years old and my oldest brother's holding me. And I focused, I zoomed in on this old picture, an old black and white picture, and I was holding a little tiny plastic guitar. And that's my father's influence, and he wanted me to learn to play guitar. And in elementary school, we were given a choice between learning to play a recorder.
Oh, I remember those.
Or a ukulele. So I immediately went with the ukulele, played the ukulele, then started playing guitar. Once I got a little bit bigger, my hands would fit the fretboard. And that's pretty much how I got started. I was just playing at home, and my brother had a guitar, and I'd use his guitar to play until I was old enough to get my own. Yeah.
How did you end up connecting with Gene McClellan, and what influence did he have on you and your music?
I met Gene through some good friends of mine's family. I was friends with the kids in the family, and their dad, Jack McAndrew, was Gene's manager at the time. So I was just around, we were just kids around Gene, and Gene, once I got a little bit older than that, Gene would let me hike out to his house in the country and sit in and listen to all these famous musicians he had, in from Toronto to play or in from L.A. to play with them, and Gene was always very encouraging for me, and Gene was totally gracious, and like I say, he had just become a big superstar. And I was too young to know I shouldn't bother him. So very nice of Gene. And then we just became friends after that in our lives, like just throughout a bunch of years. And then I played, I tried playing guitar with him and it wasn't working. I'd be going like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And like I'd do that. And so I switched to bass and played bass with Gene on a bunch of shows. And that worked much better for us, yeah.
We are talking to island legend Scott Parsons here on Isletunes. Let's focus now on the subject of black history, more specifically island black history. What inspired you to delve into it and to heighten awareness of it on the island?
Well, I had moved back to Prince Edward. I'd been living out west for quite a while. And I came back here and I was living right on the sort of corner of Houston and where Brighton Road starts. Mm. And the friend of mine Jim Hornby wrote a book called Black Islanders, and I was reading his book. And as I'm reading the book, I realized I'm living in the bog. I was my apartment right where I was living there was part of the bog.
And the bog was a
black neighborhood. It was what they called the black neighborhood in Charlottetown. And it sort of ran from, you know, Brighton and Euston Street there and Rochford Street all the way down to the waterfront, like pretty much down to Water Street. And that whole area, like where the government buildings are, the mm-hmm. provincial government buildings are, that whole area was the bog. So I was reading my friend's book, and I read the story of a guy that was here in 1785. His name was Jupiter Wise. So that's what we called my band for a bunch of years. I wrote the song Jupiter Wise. And just from that point on, I realized that the stories of Black Islanders, nobody here mentioned it, not in the history books. It was just not talked about. And I remember one of my my mother's friends saying, Scott, please don't write songs and stir up trouble. I said to my mom's friend, I said, I have to write these songs. So I started there, and then I found my little niche as a musician and just kept on writing over the last 30 years songs of PEI Black history. Yeah.
And as a bookend, your most recent album on this subject, The Gates of No Return, Songs of PEI Black History, just came out in 2022. Overall, the last 30 years, what has PEI reaction been, given it's mostly a white audience here?
The response has been actually very good, because a lot of people had no idea that there were any black people in their ancestry. It had just been kind of hushed.
Whitewashed?
Sure.
Shall we say?
a lot of people here just had no idea. I mean, a lot of the families did know, though, right? A lot of people. And most of those families are still here. So I thought it was really necessary to write these stories so that people became aware. Also, the contributions that black people made weren't just like from court records, it seemed like they're all doing just bad stuff. But the contributions that everyone made, like women here, the black women here birthed children, they fed everybody, they did the laundry, they cooked and they cleaned, and all the men worked together back then, like, you know, they'd out to the woods and everybody worked together. And so there was no really overt racism then, really very little here, because there had been really no really strong black community to keep things alive, right? 1700s, yeah. You know, there were black people here since the 1700s.
PEI. Who knew?
Most people, like, well, it just didn't get talked about, so really not many people knew that, except anyone who had, you know, black ancestry that they were aware of.
Right, you know? Yeah. So now people do know because of you.
Well, not just me. There's been a lot of people
who
have helped with that.
Well, of course, but I mean, you certainly helped amplify that knowledge. Now, as you're not the only one sitting here with broadcasting school experience. That's something we have in common. I usually function as DJ in this outfit. But I thought it might be cool to turn the virtual turntable over to you. So pick one of your songs focusing on PEI Black history for people to hear, and tell us why you've chosen it.
Well, I would say you could play the song Free Love from the last album here.
Okay.
And Free Love Hazard Allen was her name. First, her name was Free Love Hazard because she was owned by somebody whose last name was Hazard. Then she married John Allen and became Free Love Hazard Allen. Well, she and her husband and a good friend of theirs, whose name was John Bass, they stole coins and clothing worth about £25 from Colonel Robert Gray. And back then, there were no jails in PEI, so they just as soon hang you as put you up somewhere and feed you.
Of course.
So the two men, because Free Love had taken the majority of whatever loot and clothing they had, the two men were each given 500 lashes and had their left hand burned with a T for thief. Mm. And Free Love was sentenced to be hanged. Early example of social justice back then. Black and white women in Charlottetown all got together and they petitioned Governor Fanning at the time to not hang Free Love. And so he kindly didn't hang her. She, but she was banished from PEI forever, and if she returned, then they would hang her. So, so Free Love left PEI never to return.
Except in song, by you.
Yes, except in song. I'm sure she wouldn't have thought that, you know, all this, like, you know, over 100 years or more later, that somebody would be writing a song about them.
I'd hope she'd be glad that somebody did.
I hope so.
Scott, it's been wonderful having you here. I'm so grateful that you stopped by.
Thank you for having me in for this. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Now listen and learn. This is Scott Parsons with Free Love on Altoons.
Free love, free love. Hazard Allen was her name. Free love, free love. Sentenced to be hanged. Free love stole coins and clothing, value of 25 pounds, from Colonel Robert Gray of Charlottetown. To have a speedy trial, since there was no jail back then, rid of Oy and Terminer, the trial would soon begin. Free love, free love. Hazard Allen was her name. Free love, free love. Sentenced to be hanged. Court proceedings soon found that she was not alone. Her husband, John Allen, and their good friend, John Bass. Their offense was clergyable, so a bond to keep the peace. 500 lashes, left hand burned with a tea. Free love, free love. Hazard Allen was her name. Free love, sentenced to be hanged. Free love, convicted. Death penalty pronounced. A petition to the governor from ladies of Charlottetown. Pleading by, but her life be spared. Asked Fanning for respite. Let her leave the island, never to return. Free love, free love. Hazard Allen was her name. Free love, sentenced to be hanged.
Scott Parsons, telling the story through music of Island Slave Free Love. From his 2022 album, The Gates of No Return, Songs of PEI Black History, on Altoons. This interview wasn't the only time my path would cross with Scott's in 2024 in terms of amplifying the bygone days of Black Islanders. We both appeared on the same episode of The Ghosts of Prince Edward Island, a docu-series available on Bell 5 TV One, which chronicled the 1878 murder of George Kelly, a young man living in the Bog, a largely forgotten Black neighborhood inside the borders of Houston, Pownall, Richmond, and West Streets in downtown Charlottetown that was demolished for a redevelopment project in the early 20th century and has never been recognized as part of Black Canadian heritage by the government. The more you know. March means two things on this island: March Break and the Music PEI Awards, which has been a thing around here since 2001.
This year, bilingual francophone artist Nathalie Duguay was up for Music PEI's Prix de l'Acadie Award for her debut album Virtuel, which was released in 2023. Though it didn't win, the ND, as we soon came to call her, stopped by the Isletunes studios for a visit to talk about how her solo record came to be after performing in groups for several years. This is how that talk for the episode of March 24th transpired.
Isletunes Flashback.
March 24th, 2024.
It's finally time for me to get back into interview harness for the first time in 3 weeks, and I'm happy to be able to do so with the guest I have with me today. Her debut album, Virtuel, snagged a Music PEI Awards nomination this last cycle, and in addition to her solo work, she's part of two group projects, maybe one. She is Nathalie Duguay, and I am pleased that she's here in the Isletunes studio, otherwise known as my basement. Je suis heureux que vous soyez dans le studio Isletunes, autrement appelé mon sous-sol. Right?
Oui,
I hope so.
C'est bien.
Thank you, Google Translate. Bienvenue, welcome. It's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let's do generals first. How about telling us a little bit about yourself? You've made the island your home since 1997, right?
That's right. Oh my, time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah. And you come from originally...
Northern New Brunswick, Atteville.
Oh, okay.
New Brunswick, yes. And since I've been here, I've been singing my little heart out pretty much, maybe not every summer, but for the last 9 years, I believe, I've been singing on Victoria Row in the summertime and been part of different groups of different bands, Route 21 being one of them for about 5 or 6 years. And then Tidal Tones being another one for about 3 years. And a duet as a Nat and Wayne duet that is still ongoing now.
She's looking over here because Wayne is sitting right there judging you. No, just I think you had mentioned, I was under the impression that Tidal Tones was still ongoing, but that's done, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've moved on to actually writing my own album and doing some shows for where I'd like to play my original songs live on stage.
Cool. So, gosh, you're in all kinds of groups. You're almost like Prince.
Yes, I'm even actually thinking of going with initials. Maybe not a symbol like Prince did, but initials for my signature, like ND.
ND.
Yeah.
It could work.
Could it?
It could work.
Yeah.
Yo, I'm ND.
Yeah.
Represent y'all.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool. Hey, what's up, ND? You know?
I can see it. I can totally
see it. I totally feel that.
You do. Yeah, I'm feeling it. What inspired you to make the jump into recording your own solo work after playing with groups for so long?
One thing that I've noticed here on the island, so I've been living here on the island, is there are so many artists out there and that have their own original songs. And I found that so amazing. And I really admired that. And it was really inspiring too. And so what I did for a few years was just kind of note down little words here and there, little sentences here and there. And then I had these little melodies in my mind. And so after a while, like I had like 2 or 3 Hilroy books full of words and melodies. My goodness, I had so many of them that I had to empty my phone because my phone wasn't even working anymore. I had all these melodies recorded on it. But and it just all of a sudden all came flooding through and I started writing my own song.
It was time.
It was time. And
the muse was like, okay, ND.
Yeah.
Let's get going on this. Nice.
I'm liking this ND thing even more and more by the minute.
Yeah, it's going to work. It's going to work. What I find interesting is that 1/3 of Virtuel's tracks are in English. I've noticed that usually when a Francophone artist puts out an album, the repertoire is all French. What made you decide to go bilingual with the EP?
Well, part of my identity is being bilingual. So I guess it was just a natural thing for me to put those English songs in there because I do sing in both languages and I've lived most of my life since I was a teenager in both languages. I went to French school, but I hung out with English friends. So bilingual to me is part of my identity.
Along with Aubin, Pila, Estebe, and Sorten and Batelo, you were nominated this year for Music Piaz Collège de Liuqui de l'Acadie Award. Even though Sorten and Batelo took that trophy, how did it feel to be up for that honor, especially for your debut album?
Wow. It was wowy. Like, I couldn't believe it. And when I got the news of it, I couldn't believe it. I was totally awed. Like, and I think I checked every site, every to make sure it was true, because I didn't believe it.
Who's trying to fool me?
Yeah, as foolish as it sounds, right?
I think I would have done the same thing. To take
it was just bouche bée, as they say in French. I thought that was pretty special.
It was pretty special, yeah. And I certainly think your album deserves it.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much.
And now you can say it was Music PI Award nominated. Not everybody gets it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly helping, you know, like to when I submit applications to play for festivals. And yeah, it doesn't hurt to put that in.
Yeah, you know, I got nominated. You know? So how about green lighting this thing already? Just how about any more recordings, more singles, maybe another album? I mean, I know, you know, those aren't always easy to produce, but...
You know what? They are not. I'm finding that out. As funny as it is that this album, Virtue, came flooding through all these songs and it just flowed so, you know, kind of naturally or without too many challenges. This, a new album, I've been thinking about, I'd love to write a new album. But it's not coming as easy as the last one for some reason.
Then maybe it's not time. Maybe not.
But I have started working on a couple of songs. I started writing, so I've been kind of gathering lyrics and little melodies in my head about it and whatnot, but it's not quite there yet.
That's okay. It's in development. It'll come when it's ready. I find that, at least for me, the artistic mechanism is not something you really have any control over.
No, I've come to find that out too, and I've heard artists say that, you know, and I didn't really know what they meant by that, but now I really do. Mm-hmm. Know.
It happens when it happens.
Exactly.
So we are still in the Virtuel era, and that's okay.
Yes.
Because it hasn't been up all that long. Now, as I've noted, most of Virtuel is in French, but I've decided to go with one of your English cuts. Stop Haunting My Heart. So how about telling us what inspired that song and or anything else about it that stands out for you?
Absolutely. Stop Haunting My Heart is an original, but it is not my original. It is the late Ron Kelly's original. He wrote it and wrote the melody and whatnot. And he gave me that song.
Nice.
He did. And I was pretty touched by that. Ron was a follower of mine. And it really touched me for him to do something like that. He really believed in my talent and supported me and, you know, was there to cheer me on and listen to my music. And he gave me the song and said, you know what, now you take the song and you do whatever you want with it.
That's pretty amazing.
That,
talk about trust.
Yeah, that it just amazed me that somebody would just give me a song, because writing a song is a lot of work, you know, and I said, wow, you know, like, so I took this song and I brought it out one day and I said, gosh, I really like the sound of this melody. I didn't really want to change the melody. Ron had like an Hispanic feel to it, and it was a little bit faster and Hispanic. And then I slowed it down and made it a haunting feeling song. And that's how that went, yeah.
Nice. And we're going to hear it right now. Yes. I've been chatting with Natalie Duguay. Her album Virtuel is out on all the usual platforms and Bandcamp. Natalie, merci mille fois for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
It was. And now, Stop Haunting My Heart on Altoons.
Stop haunting my heart. To go, but you need to know I won't fall for your schemes. Get out of my head, leave no memories behind.
Stop Haunting My Heart, that is, from Nathalie Duguay and her Music PEI Award-nominated album, Virtuel, on iTunes. That is an honor she will always be able to attach to that record, much in the way I will always be able to say iTunes is PEI Arts Award-nominated, which it was this October. The podcast didn't win, dagnabbit, but again, being considered for the trophy means forever bragging rights. Did I mention that iTunes is PEI Arts Award-nominated? The show went back to school in April, in a way, when covering the efforts of SOPA, or the School of Performing Arts program over at Holland College. For over a decade, SOPA has attracted students from all over the world and produced several island artists who now grace the PEI music scene with their solo and group work. If you're going to have a director of such a program, it might as well be someone with mega music cred, like Liam Corcoran, who you likely know as the frontman for 2 Hours Traffic. Liam came over to SOPA Dish about the program, its students, and I also got him to reveal some then-exclusive news about the future of the THT. It was all on the April 21st episode of iTunes, which we're about to relive thanks to an
iTunes flashback.
April 21st, 2024.
Prince Edward Island may be Canada's littlest province, but no one can deny it's big on talent. And some of that talent is nurtured through Holland College's School of Performing Arts, or SOPA, as it is conversationally known. Every year, students from all over the world enter its doors, and every year, island audiences are treated to a concert performed by its musical cadets. Here to tell us about the students and the program itself is Liam Corcoran, who you may know from a little band. Oh, God. What was the name of that? Oh, 2 hours traffic. And of course, his solo work of Welcome to the Altoon Studios, otherwise known as my basement. I'm glad you could pop by.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. Now, if I have this right, your official SOPA title is program manager. In this capacity, what does a program manager do?
So I work really closely with the faculty, with the instructors, planning, scheduling, looking at special events and how we're going to promote ourselves to the public. A little bit of everything. I'm not in the classroom with them, but pretty much everything else I'm involved in when it comes to school performing arts.
Yeah. Let's backtrack a little bit. How long has SOPA been around?
It's been a little over a decade.
Okay.
Yeah. And I wasn't there in the beginning.
Well, you were a little busy.
Yeah.
I keep hearing that the classes are pretty small. How many students does SOPA accommodate in a year on average, do you think?
Generally, we're between 20 and 25 for an intake, and most of those students make it through to second year. So we have usually 40 to 50 students in total at one time. Like most programs at the college, it's not like university programs where you would have a couple of hundred people listening to a lecture. It's very much we know every student, we have one-on-one time with every student. And actually, for the theory-based classes, we split that group of 25 into two. So you might have, 10 or 12 people in your theory class or your training class, because that requires even more attention to each student.
Now, assume for a moment that someone my age could even get into the program. Also assume that I passed the audition process. Mm-hmm. What could I look forward to learning once your legion of instructors is in front of me?
Well, I should say, to comment on the age, we've had students that are older than you come into the program and do quite well. So we're very much open to all ages, although it tends to be people in that 18 to 25 range would be the common age range. But you take a wide variety of courses. We really cram a lot into 2 years. First thing I say to people is you're not sitting around playing music all day. We're building a lot of skills that will help you once you get into the practice space. So you do things like theory, ear training. Everyone does courses called keyboard harmony. We consider keyboard to be a universal instrument that all musicians can use to get their ideas across. They don't have to be experts in it, of course. And then we also look at genre study. So for every semester, you learn two genres, meaning that you have a classroom course that looks at the history, social impact, and how these genres played into our history. But then, and then you also are performing those styles in your ensemble class. So you start off with rock and country, then R&B and pop, then Celtic and world and Acadian. And then we finish off with jazz and Latin with our second year. So we're trying to do a little bit of everything when it comes to contemporary music.
Nice. That's pretty well-rounded. And from what I understand, you teach business as well as music itself.
And that's exactly where I was thinking to go next. So you read my mind. With us being a contemporary music program, we're trying to really train students to have a career in this industry that they've chosen. Today, being an artist, a musical artist starting out, the business skills are crucial. So mm-hmm. We focus on marketing and promotion, building a business plan for yourself, which in many cases is like running a small business when you're an independent musician. So you know, our students are going to go in a lot of different directions, but we're trying to put, the way we see it, is we're putting tools in their kit for when they come across these things that they're not thinking about it for the first time, and they have some idea on how to tackle some of the business issues that they're going to come across.
I'm speaking with Liam Corcoran, musician and program director for the Holland College School of Performing Arts. Now, SOPA Garage, admittedly, I first walked by it and I thought you guys had your own mechanic set up. But obviously, it was pretty far off with that.
Yeah, so the college was expanding for many years, and when the School of Performing Arts landed on the Charlottetown campus, or where it was developed on the Charlottetown campus, we had to find somewhere to play music and make a lot of noise. So one of the buildings that was created, there was an old garage built for a car from many, many years ago.
Oh, so it really was a garage.
It really was a garage, and it was just kind of falling apart. And the Heritage Retrofit Carpentry Program, which is also on the campus, they were brought in on a project to basically turn this into a modern building with the purpose of it being a rehearsal space. It did very much play into that stereotype or that, you know, classic image of playing your first band rehearsing out in the garage, in your right. in your parents' garage. So it seemed kind of fitting. So it was a really nice, really well-built space. Students love performing there. And it for several years, it was just a single building, single room. And last summer, we did a major expansion, which we're very grateful for the college's support in that. And we now have four rehearsal rooms in there. It's tripled in size. Wow. It's so we have this complex now where you can go in and different sized rooms and play with your ensemble, but also just the projects you're working on your own. And it's a busy building.
Is there a recording studio in there too?
There's so one of the spaces was built with that in mind. So it's got your control room and your tracking room. Is it fully set up and operational yet? No. It's,
what studio?
We're always playing catch up. The focus this year was just making sure we had the space for everyone to do their lessons and rehearsals, but we're going to get there.
As demonstrated so far in this episode, a good deal of SOPA students either record original music while in the program or once graduating from it as solo artists or in bands. What do you think SOPA's impact on PEI's overall music scene has been?
I'd like to think that it's just raised the bar of expectation. If you're, say, hiring a musician from SOPA, if they've succeeded in our program, then they should be someone who is showing up uber prepared for their rehearsals, ready to go, ready to be flexible in a number of different genres. I think that's important. A lot of the scenes that I came out of, you kind of had your one genre and that's what you did. Right. And we promote a lot of flexibility. So if a country band calls and you, that might not necessarily be your number one genre, but you'll have had some exposure and experience in that. So we're just trying to create like great music professionals. And just to look at the Music PEI Awards, the ECMAs that are coming up, Juno Fest, we had students going over there. I mean, the joy for us as staff is when we see our students flourishing in the industry. And after doing this for a little over a decade, you're starting to see those careers blossom for some of our former students. So that is very rewarding to see.
Yeah, it certainly is. Given your own status as a solo artist and, of course, a founder of 2 Hours Traffic, I'll probably be sued if I don't ask. Any new material coming this year from you and or THT?
Good timing for that question, because 2 Hours Traffic has been in the studio over the past couple of months, and we have 5 new songs being mixed.
Oh, wow.
as we speak, actually.
I love good timing.
Yeah, great timing for awesome. That. So, been many years since we released new material, so that'll be exciting. Not exactly sure what the rollout plan is yet, but within 2024, we expect people to hear some new music.
Awesome. Yeah, it has been a while, so this will be really good. And now to finish up this special SOPA episode is a trio who has gone from only having a demo available to putting out their first official track, which was just released March 29th. This is the jazzy, funky goodness of Somewhere Soon with Video Games. Drop in a quarter and listen on Altoons. Thank you. somewhere soon, who wouldn't be in this somewhere without SOPA, and their first officially released track, Video Games, chip-tuning its way through iTunes. The Sooner Somewheres are comprised of Hannah Melanson, Joey Esker, and Maya Catalina Marquez Calle, or at least they were comprised thusly. I only just now learned that there was a parting of the ways in the band, leaving founder Hannah to announce that her project would eventually take on new members somewhere soon. Speaking of roster changes, 2 Hours Traffic is indeed back, albeit with solo artist Nick Donoff replacing guitarist Alec O'Hanley, who has himself hit it big in all ways. To give you an update on the new music Liam Corcoran promised in our interview, they are making good on said promise January 15th, when their new record drops. You'll hear a track here. And if you're interested in old records becoming new again, the band has re-released their seminal album Territory on light blue vinyl to celebrate its 15th anniversary. Go grab it. It may be hard to believe now, but there was once a time when no one had heard of 2 Hours Traffic, and their first ever single had to stand alone as representing the band and being enough of an enticement to get people wanting to hear more of their music. The same is true for this fellow who came to PEI by way of Egypt and released his own first song back in June. He gave me a chance to not only be on the ground floor of his brand new career, but to give his debut single some exposure. We talked about his famous father and how a bet with his roommate led to the production of music that led him to finally let an example of it loose on the world. The fellow is Hikado. The episode is from June 9th, and by playing it here, our interview becomes an
I'll do flashback.
June 9th, 2024.
Now, every artist, no matter how famous and no matter how entrenched in popular culture, was completely unknown until their first release. After all, everyone has to start somewhere. And that's why I'm excited to be a part of this artist's debut effort. Despite an education in computer science and a career in software development, the call of music was so strong for this fellow that he is now planning to carve out a career for himself in entertainment. And when you hear his first single, just released a few days ago on June 5th, I think you'll agree he's off to a damn good start. Here in the iTunes Studios, also known as my basement, I'd like to introduce you to Hikado. Welcome, and thank you so much for stopping by so we can chat.
Hello, thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here. Now, I understand that you are originally from Egypt, correct?
Yep. So I was born in Cairo, just like the center of Egypt.
Sure.
Born there, my family's from Alexandria. It was beautiful. The thing is, I didn't even spend too long there. I spent about 2 to 3 years there before I traveled to Lebanon.
Oh.
And then I was raised in Lebanon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then we did end up going back to Egypt later in my teenage years. I stayed there for most of school. So I learned a lot from both places.
And what was that like living there?
In Lebanon, it was so beautiful. It was, you know, the mountains and the weather and everything. And they're so bilingual, and there was French, there was Arabic.
Oh, of course.
So it was really diverse, you know? And so I'd speak Arabic at home, and then I'd go to school and speak English. And it was really fun, yeah.
And Egypt, was it like that too, or?
Not really. Egypt was mostly Arabic. But I also was educated in English in my high school years in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
I say I learned my English from watching Cartoon Network when I was younger.
Yes. Who says television isn't educational?
Yeah.
What brought you to PEI then?
So I was kind of looking for a way to get out of Egypt just for sort of a English education. PEI was the closest opportunity, yet the farthest area.
True.
So I kind of got the opportunity to get a transfer from my university back in Egypt to UPEI.
Ah.
And so I studied computer science there a couple of years, graduated about 2 years ago, and now I'm a computer science software developer, actually.
So how long have you been on the island now?
So I've been here for about 5 years now. And it's been really cold.
Yeah, I guess compared to Cairo and Lebanon,
man.
It would be. Okay, you say in your bio that your own musical journey has been profoundly influenced, your words, by your father, Riyad El-Hamshari.
Yep.
A composer who was known for his own albums in Egypt. Would you describe that profound influence for us?
So, to be honest, it's just his biggest achievements. I just grew up knowing them mostly as stories too, because he passed away when I was 6 years old.
Oh wow.
And so I kind of grew up with that kind of myth, you know, as my dad, who was, he was kind of famous when he was 8 years old, singing in like the opera house and stuff like that.
Wow.
And it was very big. So as I grew up, and I didn't even know I was going to make music at all. I just started playing instruments and I was like, oh, this is fun. But then slowly I was like, oh, starting to realize like I sort of have a gift given from like my family tree. I'm like, oh, I should do more of this.
Now for you, what is the significance of the name Hikado? If Google Translate has not failed me, it's Japanese for sun gate, right?
So it's not as deep as you think for me.
Okay.
I honestly, the first thing I thought about was the color of sort of what I want to give out in my music. So like if you listen to a song of mine, what color do you think, sort of thing. And I was sort of thinking of a kind of blue pink sort of thing going on there.
Yeah.
And so that kind of led me to the word Mikado.
Of course.
Right. And of course. And sort of like theatrics and I don't really know too much about anything of Japanese history in any way, but I just really like that word and kind of the association it has and the images when you press on the Google search.
So, good old Google, where would we be without it?
And then I was like, oh, Mikado, that sounds cool. I just ended up putting my first letter of my first name.
It makes sense.
Hikado, Mikado. And I was like, yeah, that's simple enough.
So you really hadn't thought of exploring the music until when? So how did that happen?
It kind of just happened in fourth year of university. It's funny, actually, because I was like talking to my friend and I was like, oh, hey, maybe I should just start making music. Maybe I should just have fun, make music. It was just random. It just came out of nowhere, really.
Wow.
And I was like, because I was playing guitar for a while, since I was 15. And I was like, yeah, let's download the software and try to make some music. And so I made a bet with my roommate. And I was like, what we did was we were like, we need to be more productive. We need to do more things. And so he was like, let's make like a Google sheet online or something. Like every week I'm going to keep you accountable of the things you want to do.
Nice.
And I'm like, yeah, let me make a song. And then he's like, let me do my homework.
I kind of like that.
And so that ended up happening for the whole summer. So every week I would finish a song and every week he'd do his assignments at university.
Right.
And so I ended up just every week finishing a song. I kept doing that and doing that even after the kind of challenge ended.
Right. An original song or just practicing a song?
Originals.
Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Production, like learning how
once
to
once a week. Wow.
Yeah, they weren't good songs. Gosh. They were not good. Those are not going to see the light of day ever, but
it's in the vault.
Yeah, they led me somewhere.
I'm speaking with Hikado, who came to the island from Egypt and this past week kicked off his musical career here with his first single. What made you finally decide to take the important step of releasing music?
Oh my God, it was a long journey. me personally, like, and anyone that knows me, they'd call me a perfectionist.
I know nothing about
too
that.
Too much.
Nothing.
And you know how it torments you sometimes,
yes,
right?
Yes, it does.
And I was just making music, and I never finished a single track until my second to third year of making music. Which is like now. My third year is like now.
Oh, wow.
Almost. Like I'm leading up to the fourth year. But like I never ended up finishing a single track because I was just so hopped up on let me make another song. I don't really know where this one's going. I want to hop up. I want to make more things. And I couldn't commit to a single song. And so third year, I was like, you know what? Let me finish 10 songs. I'm going to finish 10 songs. And no matter what, no matter whether I like them or not, no matter what, because I know that even if you don't like the song that you're making as well, I don't believe that you're the person that needs to decide whether the song is worth making or not.
Good point.
You know, there's songs that artists love that don't make it. There's songs that artists hate that make it big.
Absolutely.
So just make the art. And so I finished the 10 songs. And out of all of them, there was enough. Enough was the one that I chose.
It's the lucky one. That's
the lottery.
Are you planning to put out more singles then, and maybe an entire album?
So definitely, there's going to be more of me coming out. I have, like I said, I have that whole vault of those 10 songs that I finished. And so I'm planning on releasing a single, another single, pretty soon.
Great. Do you think you might ever record songs in Arabic?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh, man. That's crazy. It's like you've been reading my text or something.
Who says I haven't?
I was just thinking about that like yesterday. And I'm like, because, you know, a lot of the musicians that my dad knows back in Egypt and everyone that I respect back there. And the language is beautiful.
Yes.
Right? I just kind of, I want to do it justice. And I want to write well in Arabic if I'm going to do that. You know, so it might take some time, but I'm planning on it.
Nice. Well, I mean, I think too, just from a PEI perspective, I mean, there's really not a lot of that here.
And yeah, that would be really exciting too.
That would be.
To perform and kind of, I've never seen that here anywhere.
No. I don't think I have either.
Yeah.
Now, putting the future where it belongs, in the future, let's concentrate on the present and your debut single Enough, which I'm honored to be able to play for you guys here on the show. You've described it as being about uncertainty in relationships, something I think all of us can relate to at one time or another. What else can you tell us about the track?
So this one was kind of written, it was last summer, and I was just sitting at my family's house in Mississauga. Mm-hmm. And I was just visiting my mom and my brother. And I just had my laptop and my headphones and just like a mic or something and a guitar that I rented out from Long McQuaid. And I was like, I need to make something. I just kind of felt the need to do something because I was kind of heading into a new relationship at the time. And that uncertainty came out. And so I sat down and I wrote sort of just how I felt about what was going on with this relationship that I was about to go into. And you can hear in the track that there's kind of there's a battle between kind of, you know, there's wanting to be loved and there's, I don't know if this is right. I don't know what's going on. You know, it's complete uncertainty. And what I wanted to communicate with the track was that uncertainty makes things worthwhile sometimes. You know, you have to kind of dive in. If you're feeling uncertain, it might be a good opportunity.
And you did it.
Can't believe it.
And it's Enough.
It's Enough.
It's literally Enough. I've been chatting with exciting new PEI artist Hikato, who has just released, as we said, the first single, Enough. And somehow I don't think that's going to be enough. Yeah, you can also find him DJing at the Sportsman's Club, right?
Yes.
And Pony Boat. And I can't wait to see how his musical career develops. Congratulations on your debut effort. And thanks for taking the time to come over here and talk with me about it.
Thanks for having me. Great conversation.
Distance, peace, you fall out. and I just wanna feel loved in this chaotic place.
Enough from Hikado on this year-end episode of Isletunes. This year certainly ended well for Hikado, who released two follow-up singles to this one and picked up no less than 5 Music PEI nominations: New Artist of the Year, Single of the Year, Album Art of the Year, Digital Presence of the Year, and Music Video of the Year. We'll find out if Hikado won some or all of these at Music PEI's Big Awards Gala March 8th, 2025. Isletunes hit its own milestone for 2024 by doing up its 50th episode July 21st, then coming back a few weeks later and starting a second season on August 18th. And what's a season opener of any show without a big event? In this case, the appearance of Kinley, who helped kick off this new era of the podcast. She talked about the early 20th century origins of her signature violin, how her work has informed education on the island regarding consent and gender norms, and she filled us in on her then new single, which continues those themes of empowerment. She's all caps, which is internet etiquette for shouting, so here's Kinley!
Isletunes Flashback!
August 18th, 2024.
That's right, baby, Isletunes Season 2 kicking off here in the Isletunes studio, otherwise known as my basement. I've got someone with me who's so kick-ass, her name is in all caps, and she started playing violin with the group Hey Rosetta in 2007, toured all over the place with them until her cousin said, "Hey, you! You ought to record your own music." Yeah. Did I mention that her cousin is Liam Corcoran from 2 Hours Traffic? Yeah, him. Anyway, so Liam's cousin followed that advice in 2016 and has been racking up Music PEI and ECMA awards ever since. And not to be outdone, she's got her own world premiere track to contribute to this world premiere themed return episode. She is Kinley, and she's here, and I'm super jazzed she's agreed to sit for the Isletunes studio microphones. Welcome, Kinley. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me.
It's
this
great.
Is fun.
This is awesome. Now, I've got to ask, names and affectations have always interested me, and that's why my professional name is Adam Michael James. So what inspired you to stylize your given name in all caps?
Love that question. No one's ever really asked me that before. Well, my name is Kinley, and it came from my mom's maiden name was McKinley, so she just took off the M-A-C, so nice. McKinley. Side note, I wasn't named for like a few days, and I was like, you had 9 months to figure this out. But anyways, and I was always just like the tallest kid in my class, but I was always like kind of trying to shrink to fit in. Mm. So then I was finally like, you know what? I'm going to write my own songs and stand
never
tall.
Never shrunk to fit in.
Yeah, so I'm standing tall, as nice. Big as I am.
And
my name's going to be big.
And that is deserving of all caps.
Yeah.
I think so. I think it totally works. As I mentioned in the intro, you come from quite the musical pedigree around here. How else does one describe having Liam Corcoran as a cousin? And of course, your dad is famous drummer Alan Dowling. Now, it would have been easy to follow in such footsteps, and some people do that kind of thing. But how did you find your own groove? And was it a purposeful decision to set yourself apart? Or did that just come naturally?
Well, growing up, yeah, you're right. My dad is like an amazing, like, when I was growing up, he was mostly playing a lot of jazz. So there's always like a jazz trio rehearsing in our living room while my mom was like making muffins, and then she'd have a rehearsal in the like later. She's a classical pianist with like opera singers coming over.
Wow.
And then I don't know, I just kind of like absorbed a lot. And then they took me to a lot of concerts and they put me in piano lessons, which I didn't like. I was like, our piano was right in front of the living room window, and I just see the kids playing outside, and I was like, I want to be. But then in grade 4, I just heard on the loudspeaker one day, they're like, if you want to play violin, come down to the music room. And I was like, that's different. Nobody I know really plays violin. So I went down, and then my grandparents were really excited because they're like, oh, your grandfather played. And then
I ended up getting his violin, which is amazing, which is the same one that I play today. So
that's,
I was like,
very cool.
All right, I'm going to do this.
That's very cool.
He got it in 1915 in Belgium, like during the war. I know, it was like apparently this bombed out town, but he walked into this house and on the shelf was this perfectly beautiful, amazing violin
that survived.
Was untouched. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Borrowed it. Sorry, Belgium.
Sorry, the overdue fees for 109 years. They add up, but that's okay. You know. Obviously, you've got a new or newish now because it's been out for a month. Single, which still fits in with this world premiere theme episode. My podcast, My Rules. It's your first release since last Christmas's Drift, right?
Yeah,
just as obviously in today's music world, one can put out a single without an album following it up. Still, your last album was in 2022, Daylight, of course. Mm-hmm. Might there be a new Kinley album about to see daylight sometime soon?
Ooh, great question. I'm finding like putting out an album every 2 years is a lot. So I'm thinking that singles is the way to go.
I'm speaking with indie pop powerhouse Kinley. I didn't make that up. It's on your website.
Somebody else wrote that. It wasn't me.
You do also host open mic nights at Baba's Lounge on Wednesdays. Now, if someone wants to avail themselves of said microphones, how does someone do it? And what's this I heard about a 7-minute limit? How does that work?
Ooh, it's true.
Is there a clock? A trap door?
Well, we actually did have this like big Hollywood clock, but then the guy that was letting us use it was like, I'm going to sell it. We got to take it back. I was like, all right. So now I'm like asking people, I was like, please use your internal clock for 7 minutes, also known as two songs. But it's so fun. I guess it's been like probably 2.5 years ago I started. My friend Ryan Abdallah, who owns Baba's, was like, just asked me, he's like, I want to like change open mic up. I want to start it again, but I want like new singer songwriters to like test out their material, or like total pros to come like work on stuff or like whatever. I was like, oh, okay, that sounds pretty interesting. Yeah. So yeah, we started it, and there's like a beautiful loyal following, all these people that didn't really know each other, and now that they're there every week and they become friends. It's so cool.
It's like a little club.
Yeah, it's such a, and it's like really, really supportive. Everyone's like super lovely, and there's always like new people dropping in every week. You never know what's gonna happen. Like a couple weeks ago, there was this Romanian trio that just showed up. They're like, hey, we're just in town. Somebody told us to come up. We're like, yeah, it was wild. Last week, Irish Mython showed up, played some tunes. I was like, friggin' right. But we do have a 7-minute limit because there's just so many people that want to perform, which is awesome.
Yeah, you got to be fair. Yeah.
Yeah. And it goes from 9 till midnight. And it costs $7, cheapest show in town.
$7, yeah. 7 minutes.
Exactly, dollar minute. And if you perform, you get a free drink from the bar. And there's everything. It's not just music. There's poetry, interpretive dance.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, comedy. There's everything. Anything. It's the very open mic.
See that. Switching gears, you've blazed a trail here on PEI as a women's rights advocate. Mm-hmm. And Cosmos knows the way the world has been going, we need as many advocates for women as possible. I get the sense that the sensibility worked its way into your newest song, which we're about to play, Marrying Me. Have I sensed correctly?
Yes. Well, I kind of became an accidental advocate for women when I released my song Microphone, like on my first album in 2016.
Microphone was played in schools, right?
Which is so cool. It's like grade 9 health class, so they learn about consent, and gender norms, and just like, it's so cool. There was this whole committee that formed, and because they were like, oh, we need to change the curriculum and like update it because it's been a while. So it's so cool that they study my song and the music video and like all the different parts about it and like really take it all apart and like realize like what's going on in the world, how you're, and like the bystander rules and like everything about sexual assault, which is so important. And I wish we had it when I was in school, but it's the thing that I'm most proud of in my whole career. I'm like, wow, I can't believe this is in the schools. This
the
is
power so cool. of music.
Yeah, it's so cool.
I've listened to Marrying Me, and I think that did kind of carry over.
Right,
there's definite empowerment, whether you're a woman or not, but yeah. I mean, it's there.
I live by like 3 churches, and there's just like constantly church bells going off. And I play violin and viola, so I've been playing at weddings for like years and years, like hundreds of weddings. And I was just like, man, I always thought that I would be married. by now, 41, aka 101. Just kidding.
Age 55.
Is just a number. Yeah, right?
Still ain't done it myself.
Well, may I encourage you to marry yourself because it's so hot right now.
Yeah. And you save so much on the wedding.
Exactly. The divorce is quite cheap.
It's true. Yeah.
This is true. Yeah, so I was just like...
irreconcilable differences with yourself.
Like, it's just not going well. It's not where I wanted.
It's not me. It's me.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I just like always had this like beautiful vision of like what marriage was, and but really it was just like the dress, the party, and then. But to be honest, like I still think marriage is beautiful because I think it's just gorgeous, the idea of like one person being like, I'm going to commit to you for the rest of their lives, like I love you that much. I'm like, oh, that's beautiful. I was having a conversation with someone recently, and I was just like, oh, I can't wait for my wedding someday, and he was just like, oh, I don't really believe in marriage. And I was like, what? You don't? Okay, I've never come across this before. And he was like, oh, no. And that's when I wrote the song. So I was like, well, I thought this was the one. And I was like, I guess that's not going to happen. So that dream's not happening. So I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to have to marry myself then. Because I was like, if he's not going to marry me, I'll marry me. And then I was kind of like, you know what? I actually love that idea because if we work out or not, like I still have myself, like that's the most important thing. And I exactly. feel like self-love is like you have to just love yourself. And then I was like, why would I just deny myself of a fancy ring and a white dress? So I was like, you know what, I am gonna just do it for myself, because why
so
wait around for some
it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a $40 ring from Georgetown, but I
hey,
love
still,
it
still it counts.
Want to see it?
Yeah, I do.
It's my engagement.
Look at this, some bling, y'all.
Bling bling, money, anything. $46 with tax. Yeah, marrying me, choosing myself. And I got so many messages from people that were like, you know what, this is a song that I needed right now, because you know, loving yourself is the most important thing in life. And they're like, why wouldn't we marry ourselves?
I'm certainly grooving on the new song because of the clear 80s influence in there, in the sense, of course. Hello, 80s kid.
Yes, me
but
too.
As you guys are about to hear, paramours may come and go, but as Kinley said, the one relationship you're always gonna have is the one you have with yourself. So make it a damn good one.
Mm-hmm.
Kinley, this basement is empowered just by you being here.
I love it here.
Truly is. Hit your caps lock, everybody, because this artist and her new song is so worth it. This is Kinley with Marrying Me right here on the decidedly all lowercase iTunes. You're not the only one that gets to do styling points around here, okay? Kinley, I'm so grateful you came for a chat, and it sounds corny, but this really is an honor.
Thanks so much for inviting me. Like, I think what you're doing is incredible, and like, I'm so happy that you're doing it, and like sharing island musicians' music, it's really doesn't happen. So thank
that's
you.
Why I wanted to do it.
Yeah,
marrying me on Kinley. Let me try that again.
Welcome to my show.
Welcome to Mike going. Bleh. Okay, let's try that again.
Everywhere I go, bells start to ring, and I'm ready to dive in and show you how I feel. I want you to love me and share everything. But I guess you don't feel the same, so I'm marrying me. Yeah, you think you wrote, you think you know just how I feel. Cause you sense a lot and feel it all, but this feels too real. Cause I've been sketching up the sweetheart neckline since I was a teen. It's not all about the white dress, the photo session, your diamond ring. It's all about the love song, not what went wrong, what could have been. You say forever just ain't a thing. Well, I guess I got my answer. I'm marrying me. It's not all about the white dress, the photo session, your diamond ring. It's all about the love song, not what went wrong, what could have been. You say forever just ain't a thing.
diamond ring. It's all about the love song, not what went wrong, what could have been. And you say forever just ain't a thing. Well, I guess I got my answer. I'm marrying me. It's not all about the white dress, the photo session, your diamond ring. It's all about the love song, not
I do. Kinley reminding us of the power of self-love, because if you don't love yourself first, how can you love or be loved by others? That was this past summer's jam, Marrying Me, on iTunes. And that's a high note I am happy to leave iTunes on, since for this podcast at least, that marks the end of 2024 and of episode 70, 49 of which went live this year. That's right, I've given you new episodes for all of three Sundays in 2024, and I won't lie, it involves a lot of work. Plus, there are costs involved in doing this up every week. Double plus, it would be nice to earn a little bit of a salary from this, you know? If you just want to help a podcaster out with some loonies or toonies or other oonies, check the description of this episode for the link through which you can donate via PayPal. Or if subscription is your thing, hit up the iTunes Patreon page, where for just $5 a month, you can get access to island-only video content, meaning expanded interviews like the ones you just heard and clips of live performances. I've just put some 2 hours traffic up there from their 15th anniversary of Territory Tour. Patreon.com/iTunes. I sure do thank you in advance, and hey, if you're a business and you're thinking of sponsoring this show, hit me up, amj@iTunes.ca or 902-807-4250. Those are also the methods through which you can get in touch to make suggestions, comments, or requests. Not to mention send a recording of yourself uttering an Islanderism like Justin Dwaran did. You heard him at the beginning of this episode. Follow iTunes on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Blue Sky, and watch out for links to where you can buy the music of the artists you hear on this show from week to week on those platforms. Musical contribution to the iTunes theme by Kaylin McCauley and John Hashem. Show concept by Rocky O'Neill. Coordination assistance by Jackie Robichaux. Okay, 2024, that's enough of you. I'm Adam Michael James, and next week we'll kick off 2025. Holy hell, how are we a quarter of the way into this century already? With a swan song from the Darvel and New Year's notifications from Nathan Wiley and Oda Noel. I can't help feeling like going into 2025 is like being handcuffed to a roller coaster car about to make its first huge plunge, the first of many, and you know why, so hang on tight and let's all remember that, as it has been said, ultimately freedom and democracy are stronger than fear and tyranny. Yeah, now it. Thanks for listening, PEI. Season 7. Happy New Year!